Hey, Rob Bradford here. I have set out on a mission with my good friends at FanDuel to prove what I have known for some time. Baseball isn't boring. Now I have a daily podcast to prove it with some of the most notable people in the baseball world screaming baseball isn't boring from the mountaintops, or at least agreeing to come on our show. Players, managers, GMs, and yes, even the commissioner of baseball, Rob Manfred. It has been a constant wave of baseball's most powerful voices. So join the revolution. Subscribe and soak in Baseball Isn't Boring. Listen on your Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts. You'll be glad you did.
It is 8:46. Total Information AM continues. An interruption to the nation's rail system might be closer to reality after last week's rejection of a proposed contract by the largest rail union, the Sheet Metal Air, Rail, and Transportation Union, which represents about 28,000 employees.
And so we've been very clear from day one that a work stoppage is not in anyone's interest, and something that increasingly likely Congress may need to intervene under the Railway Labor Act.
That's the president of the Association of American Railroads, Ian Jeffries.
So where do the negotiations go from here? Joining us on the Quiver River guest line is Gregory DeYoung. He's a professor of operations management, a former import and export manager, a professor at Southern Illinois University Carbondale. Professor DeYoung, welcome to KMOX.
Thank you very much. I'm glad to join you.
So how many unions were involved in the negotiations? That's the number one unusual thing. And how difficult does that make it on negotiations?
Well, there are a total of 12 unions involved, so it is a pretty wide-ranging group of employees being represented. But right now, the major four unions, which represent a vast majority of the workers, have joined up into a bit of a coalition to align their the end of their cooling off periods, which were kind of scattered out. Now they've moved those to December 9th for all of the four major unions to coordinate their efforts and to hopefully get to an agreement. But we'll see how that works out.
All right. So you said that there were 12 unions. The main four have said yes. The sheet metal union has said no. I'm not sure where the other unions fell in, but what is it close? Are they? What are the main sticking points here?
Well, the majority of unions have approved. There were eight unions that approved, but there were four that did not. And among those were two of the largest. That would be the SMART TD Transportation Division that you mentioned, and also the Maintenance of Way employees. So they represent over half of the employees by themselves. At the same time, the votes were very close, and for the most part, so not a lot of 70-30 against the contract or for, a lot of 51-49 type votes. So there's a lot of mixed feelings in the unions themselves, it appears.
A lot of people know that most of us at KMOX, who they hear anyway, all of us are in a union, and our contracts are, you know, they've been 2-3 years long. What was the length of this last contract, and are they going for the same length going forward?
Yeah, so this was a 3-year contract, and that's the agreement that's being proposed. The interesting thing about the unions in the railway situation, though, is that until there's a new contract ratified, the old contract just stays in place unless there's a real impasse in the negotiations. So there's a status quo provision that basically the contract has been expired for several months now, and we're just in the process of trying to negotiate a new one without any work stoppage up until now.
What we've been hearing, and again, it's hard with negotiations to get into the nitty-gritty and short radio stories, but it sounds like one of the major issues is, although they are being offered pay increases, in some cases some substantial pay increases, they're still not paid sick leave, which when people hear, what, there's no paid sick leave? How does that work?
Well, yeah, and that's really the initial problem with the contract back over the summer and into September was a lot of concerns more over working conditions than actual pay. And the big sticking issue really is the sick pay. The unions are asking for 56 hours per year of sick time. The current contract does not include that, and so that's been a real sticking point. The other big sticking point right now is the pay increases, and they seem generous on the face. It's 24% over 3 years. But as inflation continues to roll along at about 8% per year, that looks like almost keeping even rather than getting ahead on pay. And that's become more of an issue, although it's still mostly over working conditions and also some staffing level concerns that the unions have.
I wonder, did anybody do what I just did? And that is the math on, on 56 hours. That doesn't seem like a lot. It's 7 days or so.
It's 7 days of paid sick time, and on top of that, then they also have their other benefits, you know, paid time off for a vacation and other such activities. But it's a convoluted sick pay system, and that's part of their concerns with it, is that there's a time when there will be time off for being sick without being paid, and basically there's a qualification time for sick pay that's really been kind of onerous for the union members to take advantage over to be able to even utilize.
And I would say, I wonder, though, if for many industries, sick leave is about, if you're gone, do I have somebody to replace you? From an HR standpoint, is that why this is a convoluted system, because there aren't enough people?
That's absolutely an issue in rail in general, is that there is a very limited labor pool of people who are qualified for these jobs. They're very specialized positions. It takes years to train an employee. And the scheduling process, with crews being scheduled together, when one member of the crew is out, that kind of impacts the entire crew. So it's harder than just scheduling individuals, where they're scheduling entire crews. And that does make any time off harder for the rail companies to manage. At the same time, if someone's sick, they're sick, and you have to deal with that.
Okay, so for people who are listening and they're thinking, but what does this mean for me? Who, if they don't particularly care about the plight of the railroad workers, what does this mean for me? Because I think during the pandemic is quite possibly the first time for many of us in our lifetimes that we saw store shelves be bare. So if we're thinking about, you know, there's already not enough truck drivers, what happens if the railroads stop running?
Absolutely. That is an issue that's going to affect us all. And if there's a bright side to the supply chain issues we've seen, it's that people are much more aware of them. So rather than working in the background, the supply chain problems have brought to the forefront the importance of that. And like any other mode of transportation, rail is extremely important. And just looking at the things that are affected over the planning for the strike starts to really give you chills, because right now we're about a little over a week and a half away from a potential strike. Already we're starting to see computer chips being shifted away from rail transportation because they're in short supply. We know that there are supply chain issues in the auto industry based on computer chips, and it turns out they're being shipped by train, so that could be affected. When we look at getting closer to the strike, we start to take hazardous materials off. Chemicals for water treatment plants and such start to be removed from rail shipment about 4 days out. And it just continues to, there's a whole list of things that we all get that at some point or another are on a train while they're traveling across the country.
We hear the same thing about trucks. If you've bought it at a store, it came to you on a truck. But before that, it came to you on a train. And even maybe before that, it might have come to you on a barge.
Absolutely. We have a very interrelated transportation system. And all you have to do is go anywhere near a railroad and you see all of the trucks and all of the containers being transported on trains. They got to the train station on a truck. They're going to leave the train station and go to their destination on a truck. But in the meantime, they're piggybacking across the country. And that is a huge impact on the trucker situation, which, of course, we have a shortage of truck drivers. So there's really not a lot of extra capacity to pick up the slack if the rail service did stop.
It seems like the pressure must be on at this point the railroad companies. Is that working to the advantage of these unions? I suppose this is why they're feeling fairly confident to be able to say no.
Well, there's pressure on both sides. So definitely the railway companies stand to lose a lot of money if there is an actual strike, because they don't make money when their trains are sitting still. At the same time, the other player in this whole thing is Congress and the president. And if a strike actually does occur, Congress does have the ability to pass a resolution, and if it's signed by the president, they can force the end of a strike or of a lockout by the railways, by the way, to basically end a threat to the nation's supply chain. So it would take an actual act of Congress. But it's happened in the past, and certainly there have been discussions about this already. And in fact, there was a bill introduced in the Senate in September to head off a labor strike. So there definitely is pressure on both sides to find a solution rather than have a solution imposed upon them from outside.
I do wonder if a Democratic president, a Democratic House, a Democratic Senate, who would be more moved we do have an understanding of which party would be more moved to step in.
Well, you would think so, and that may be true, and there may be a little more resistance right now than after the first of the year when the new Congress is sworn in. But at the same time, a disruption in train service is so widespread and so damaging that I think both parties would act quickly to end it if it actually did start. We're talking huge increases in inflation, tremendous disruptions of people's lives, and you know, regardless of political affiliation, that's going to have a real fast impact on the Congress itself.
All right. Before we let you go, just to recap, we could be looking at strikes as soon as next week. But what's the next step in this? Are they getting back together? Are they still at the table? What's the latest?
Well, there's still discussions going on. And actually, a couple of unions have moved out the end of their cooling off period to December 9th to match up with the majority of the workers that are represented. So we're really not looking at anything until then. It looks like the unions have really coalesced into a group that settled on a December 9th date for at least considering a strike. Right now, we're still in the cooling off period, and really as long as negotiations are making progress, the cooling off period and the status quo can remain unless one side or the other decides that they need to make a move.
Well, Professor, it's a meaningful discussion. Thank you so much for joining us with your insight.
I appreciate the opportunity. Thank you.
Hey, Rob Bradford here. I have set out on a mission with my good friends at FanDuel to prove what I have known for some time: baseball isn't boring. Now I have a daily podcast to prove it with some of the most notable people in the baseball world screaming baseball isn't boring from the mountaintops, or at least agreeing to come on our show. Players, managers, GMs, and yes, even the commissioner of baseball, Rob Manfred. It has been a constant wave of baseball's most powerful voices. So join the revolution. Subscribe and soak in Baseball Isn't Boring. Listen on your Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts. You'll be glad you did.